Good day, and welcome to the Green Industry Pros series on Quit Making the Labor Crunch Worse. This is show number 2 in the series, or if you're tracking this, GIP.02, and is sponsored by the Green Mark Consulting Group. I'm your host, William Eastman, Program Director for the Internet radio channel Owner Life, and dedicated to helping business owners generate wealth and create jobs in their community. The title of today's show is Do You Really Know the Job Before Hiring? And we will cover its 3 core issues. First, is the position linked to processes? Number 2, is the position linked to any key performance indicators and business objectives? And number 3, are the knowledge, skill, and certification requirements clear? There is a 4th issue, and once you establish what we're going to call eligibility requirements for the job, are your candidates a good fit for your company? It's far more than just hiring somebody who can do it. Is people, will they do it? And we will track that issue on suitability in our next show in April. So with that, what I'd like to do is introduce our guests and subject matter experts. First, I have Greg Wagow, Editor-in-Chief of Green Industry Pros Magazine, and Stephen Cohen, President of Green Mark Consulting Group. Good day, Greg. How you doing?
Very good, Bill. Thanks for having me back. Look forward to this discussion today.
Well, great. And I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you had the time to do it. And Stephen, how are you doing today?
Beautiful Richmond, Virginia, cloudy day. And I'm glad to be on the phone call again and talking about one of the challenges in our industry. So thank you for having me back.
Thank you, Stephen. Yeah, it's not a bad day in Richmond, everything considered. It looks like spring is upon us. So let me start the show this way. I want to talk about the genesis around this whole theme, this series of 8 shows that we're doing called Quit Making the Labor Crunch Worse. And it started with an article that Greg wrote back in 2014. Greg, can you kind of take us back and what prompted this article and what did you see and what were you trying to express to landscape business owners?
Yeah, around that time, Bill, you know, our industry had steadily clawed its way out of a 2008-2009 recession, and around 2013-2014, that's where we saw industry sales volume back to right about where it was before the housing crash and subsequent bursting of the bubble and economic collapse in 2009. So what I felt was our industry was going to have to change its focus back to labor because the work was there now. And so they were going to have to turn their focus back to labor, and other industries were doing the same thing. So competition for labor was definitely going to begin ramping up a couple years ago. It definitely has, and this year, from what I'm seeing, it's at a crisis level for not only our industry, but many other, we'll call, you know occupational or vocational occupations. Everybody's fighting for good, willing, and able bodies, and that's why we think our readers, landscape company owners, need to have a sound strategy to make sure that they can have the labor they need to capitalize on the opportunities in front of them.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, if you think about it, and of course, when we're talking landscaping, the analogy actually works better. I've used it for a number of years, and that is, and I think Stephen Cohen hits on this a lot, is there are good people out there. And so number one, there is no farm. Nobody's got a nursery out back where they're growing good employees. The challenge you have is they're not working for you, and why is that? And we kind of addressed that a little bit in the last show when we were talking about who are you attracting, because your branding, your advertising, your marketing, the word of mouth of your company has as much impact on who wants to work for you or doesn't as it does on the customers. Well, thanks, Greg. And what I want to do here is I want to kind of pull everybody together on the topics that we're going to cover. And that is that my experience with business owners, small business owners, and then specifically with landscaping, is that a lot of times we make the labor market we're in tighter than it needs to be. Just like the challenge we have a lot of times with how we price, and we say we're in a price-sensitive market, how often is that not true, is that we are always undercutting our price. But I want to focus on the issue of am I creating my labor restrictions? And we talked about that in show one, like I said, about attracting the right people. And so I want to talk about once I know how to attract the right candidates, what should be in that ad copy, and how do I make the sort of who to hire? So the 3 topics are going to be, one, looking at position descriptions and the processes that it serves. And I want to hit on that issue that a job description serves a process. Number two, I want to talk about the position, again, position description, role description, job description, whatever term you want to use, must have metrics tied to it, which is driven by a process, but it also has to have some business objectives tied to it. And then finally, if I know those first two, the third part of this gets a little easier because what are the knowledge, skills, and certifications that are required for somebody to be able to do the job? And we're going to focus more on ability to do the job than on fit. We're going to leave fit to the next show. So with that, what I'd like to do now is I'd like to turn back to Stephen. And Stephen, let's talk about this issue of this position process link and the fact that a position description serves a process. It's part of a process. And given Greg's take on hiring in the labor market, how critical do you think that link is between position and process? And how does a business owner tackle it?
Well, I mean, it's a critical link. What we continually do and what I continually see with clients and with any industry is we put people into positions and we expect them to do a job. And we expect them to do the job based on knowledge that they present on a resume or knowledge that they present through a job interview. And then we like to hold them accountable, to a job description. And one of the gaps that I continually see is that person really set up for success? Full circle, meaning, they understand conceptually that they have a job description of what they need to do, but, are they really set up by the organization to do it well? And that's tied to, the three things you said. So if they have a job, do they have specific processes outlined for them to do their job well? And is the measurement processes in place, or we could call them standard operating procedures, in order to measure whether that person is actually following it, whether it's, various metrics or benchmarks? And then, how does the person grow in that position professionally? And you mentioned the job, certifications, whether it's, on job training or, external education that they take. And again, there's gaps in this whole process. And, Greg may mention, it's hard to, find people. And we sometimes, you actually use the word bodies. I think a lot of times what we do is we do just that. We put bodies into positions and we don't put, people into the positions and really set them up for success.
Yeah. And Stephen, what's your experience of the small businesses in the landscape industry that you've worked with? How many of them don't have anything in terms of position descriptions or process maps around what are the core processes of the business?
Oh, I would estimate at least 95% of them don't. And if they do, if they have the job description in place and if they have certain elements of a process, let's say standard operating procedures that are tied to it, often they're not used.
Okay. Greg, let me turn to you. Is that, given your role with Green Industry Pros in the years that the magazine's been in business, you deal with probably most of the under $1 million landscape companies in the United States. What have you seen in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, just what Stephen said, most don't have the processes in place around the people issue, but other parts of the business as well. And I think the reason is when you're dealing with these under a million guys, that's, two or three crews, generally speaking. And what happens, what I've seen, is that their businesses kind of grow organically through word of mouth. They can get to that, two, three, four crew level, and then it kind of punches that owner right in the face. He knows he needs people to delegate things to. He wants people to take off some things off his plate, and he really wants to clone himself, which he obviously can't do. So a lot of frustration sets in because he knows what he wants. He wants, clones of himself, but he doesn't have anything in place to make that happen. And it seems to happen very, very quickly, where he goes from being real comfortable as a small company to all of a sudden needing these things and these people to rely on, and he hasn't done anything to that point to facilitate that transition. Then everything can start to unravel very quickly, as I'm sure Stephen will attest to.
Yeah. Stephen, what do you think the revenue size is? Or is it the number of bodies, or is it the revenue when you find yourself at that point where I can't get any bigger because I've got to do everything?
Well, it's interesting. I see people hitting that point, that pivotal point within their organization, typically between $1.5 million and $2 million is when they start to hit what I call the proverbial, brick wall. And then they have that epiphany, in order to take this company to the next level, we have to have the right people. In order to have the right people, we need to put the systems and processes in place. And it's a very, very interesting evolution of how that occurs, and more often unsuccessfully than successfully, because of the amount of effort that it takes, in order to put the systems and processes, but more importantly, the organizational mindset in place of how people actually think and act and deliver, not only internally, but externally. So it's a challenging process, but one where, if you're really looking to take your company to the next level, and I'm not talking about just in revenue generation, I'm talking about in operating efficiencies. In addition to operating efficiencies, the organizational mindset of how people can grow in the organization to the next level, it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of work for a lot of these owners. And like I said, a lot of companies fight, and they usually are successful for a period of time. And at some point, the owner feels, I'm making money the old way I did it. It's easier to make money the old way without the systems and the processes than to really, put all the systems and processes in place and all the pain it takes to get to that next level. So it's a very delicate balance, I would say.
Yeah, that's been my experience as well. And so, Stephen, let's kind of close out this first piece. What's your thoughts on what a business owner needs to do? Where do they start? And also, where can they go get some help in getting this process started?
I mean, the best way to start is through your own mindset and your own observations, and that's looking for gaps within the organization. When things occur within organization, you really have to stop and ask yourself, what is happening, why is it happening, and then what can we do as an organization to fix it? And I believe contractors and owners are always so caught up in the moment of getting the work done and generating the next sale transaction to drive income into the business, they often don't take the time to stop. So my biggest recommendation to our clients and even to readership when I write articles in conjunction with Greg is to really develop a mindset in the organization of being aware of the organizational mannerisms and everything that occurs in there. I think that's the best way to identify gaps within the organization is stop and take a minute and think about why things are actually occurring.
Okay, and in fact, that's we're going to tackle that next month. And next month's recording, we're going to be talking about that particular issue. So let's take on topic number two. So now we've established that how critical the position process link is. Let's move to the second topic, because in many ways, it's expanding upon the original, and that is, I have a position description, and it's based upon what processes that position is required to work in. It could be one, it could be two, it could be three or four. It could be customer-facing, it could be production-based, or it could be back office. But also what has to happen is two things. One is there has to be some metrics tied to it, so how do we measure it? And then number two is that it's basically a waste of energy if I don't tie some business objectives to it. And so I'm going to turn back to Stephen on this one and say, how critical is the development of what is known as KPIs and business objectives are in terms of tying it to somebody's position in the firm?
Well, it's critical. It's interesting. Again, owners often look at metrics or KPIs, let's use KPIs, and they often look at a bank balance, or they look at a QuickBooks profit and loss statement or a balance sheet to measure the health of their business. But often they don't really drill down to the details of what really makes the business tick. And what makes the business tick is operational performance. And I think what happens is in establishing KPIs, a lot of owners overcomplicate the process by creating too many KPIs. So this goes back to the position itself. is each position needs to have 1 to 3 key performance indicators tied to it and that are measurable. So for an example, if you have somebody in an operational role out in the field, a production role, the best KPI for that is estimated hours versus actual hours, okay? If that person is then reporting to a senior operations manager, that senior operations manager, you know, he's going to be a little bit less concerned about the estimated to actual. He might be looking at his KPI might be more financial, and it might be dollars. What did we, you know, what did we estimate and what did we bid in dollars, and looking at the actual financial statement. So it just depends the level within the organization and the specific role as to what KPIs you'd be looking at.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. I think that what happens is the business owners get kind of enamored with the concept because it's kind of cool, because they do it themselves when they look at the saved bank statements. And then they overcomplicate it. Either it's too many or it's too difficult to measure. And let's face it, if the person can't do it in their head, then it's beyond that. And we'll talk about that later at some time when we get into comp. And so, yeah, 2 to 3 is probably right on. And then the other part of that is, how do I link those to the objectives that the business has, because I need people to get this line of sight, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more. But I'd like to turn back to Greg here, and Greg say, and ask him, given the number of landscape companies that the magazine, you know, basically has as clients or as members, how many of those are really successful? And I use the word really. And how big a role does this play in that, in terms of having metrics and indicators around performance?
Yeah, that's a good question, and one that's hard to answer, because obviously we have, you know, 55,000 plus landscape companies that are subscribed to Green Industry Pro. So I try to talk to as many as I can, but I can't quite hit all 55,000. And
you're pretty good.
I do my best, but that's quite a few. And you know, the other thing is, obviously, we tend to migrate towards the ones who are successful. They're growing. They're doing some tremendous things in their communities, in, as far as community engagement and involvement. So what I can say is the really good companies that we tend to feature all talk about incentives for their employees that are tied to key performance indicators. Sometimes, though, we do, you know, we see the generic end-of-year bonus based on company profitability. It's almost like a profit-sharing type of thing. So, but I can say that the majority of the successful ones are doing this. Now, what percent are successful? I'm guessing, but I'd say probably half.
Okay. Yeah, I always wondered that question, because have they been successful at really just creating a job for the owner, and then the owner kind of spreads the wealth with employees, or is this really a bona fide business? But I want to pick up, Greg, on your comment around the bonus, because I know Stephen has been working on this. How do KPIs and bonus, and how does all that kind of fit together?
You're asking me, Bill?
Oh, no, Stephen. I'm sorry. I thought I said Stephen.
There you go, Stephen.
I'm sorry, Bill. Ask the question again. I apologize.
The question was, you know, Stephen, I know that you've been working on comp with a couple of landscape companies. How does bonus and KPIs tie together, and what is a easy way of getting at this?
Well, I'll tell you, after working with one client recently, it's not easy. The client and I have spent many, many hours really discussing this and looking at, you know, how do we measure performance successfully and do it using KPIs or different levels of information that are factual that when you sit down with a team member or an employee, you can actually give them something that, you know, is more than just, you know, I feel you've done this or accomplished that. So I like to look at it in elevations, essentially. I really like this 15,000, this 10,000, this 5,000 foot elevation, and establishing, KPIs at each one of those elevations, you know, for the position, and then tying those KPIs back to 3 to 6 measurements within the organization on the bonus, for a bonus scale, essentially. So, for example, you know, if you have somebody who is working in customer service, somebody who's, maybe the face of the company and doing scheduling, things like that, you know, an example would be using a, possibly a customer survey as to, how cordial and how helpful was that person on the telephone. And then it actually migrates out to the operational end where, you perform the work. And, what was the person or the persons or the team who, installed the work, were they courteous? Did it meet your expectations and things like that? So a customer survey is a great example. So, again, you have to tie it back to something that's measurable. So when you you need to be able to improve on it, if you're not missing, if you're not making the mark, and you need to be able to discuss it if you are, missing the mark, and it needs to be more than intuition based.
Yeah, because otherwise it's so subjective. Is that how do you give anybody performance feedback? Because really, if you think about why would I have KPIs? Well, there's only a couple of reasons. One is I want to drive performance of the company itself, move it forward. Number two is I want people to attend to the things that matter in the job they've got. And number three, I'd like to give them performance feedback. So if they're doing great work, whether that's a pat on the back or perhaps a bonus for doing the great work, and if they're not doing good work, then I want to see what is it going to take to kind of get it back on track. I don't have those KPIs. This gets incredibly difficult, or whatever we call them, because a lot of times, we like to use acronyms. And it basically comes down to this. Every job should have several key metrics that you look at on some consistent basis. Some of them are going to be quantitative. In other words, you're going to be able to get numbers out of them. And as Stephen said, some of these are going to be qualitative, where it's going to be more feedback, say, from customers. It's the mix of those that will give you an idea of how well that job is being performed. Stephen, any closing thoughts on this before we move on to the third topic?
No, I just, again, in building your business model, these are different things that an owner really needs to think about, as the company grows. It's easier to put these different systems and processes in place and this organizational structure in place while the business is small, because the bigger the business gets, the more complicated it is. And like I said, we've been working with a client for almost 6 months trying to put together their performance program. And, here you have a multi-million-dollar company that's been in business for over 20 years, has, has done multiple bonus structures over the years. We're trying to build a new one out, and we've built something that's a solid bonus structure that has good measurement tools within it for good conversations for the owner to have with his employees. But you're going back and forth with this with team members who are in an organization for many, many years and have gone through this, just makes it that much more difficult and actually uncomfortable for the owner. So, my best advice is it doesn't make a difference whether you're a one or two man show or a 50 man show. You need to have the foundation in place early on. It's just going to make your life and the value of your business that much better.
Okay, thank you. In fact, I couldn't agree more with that concept, is that actually as we start any business, we should be thinking about what are the bare bones measurements that we're going to engage in so that we know we're making progress, and that if we're not getting the financial results that we want in the business, how do I backtrack to find out why we didn't? Okay, so now what we've done is we've assembled the two most critical pieces of information for what we're discussing. And one is we take a position description and we link it to a process. So as we fill it out, and what are your roles and responsibilities, what are you supposed to be doing, that comes from whatever processes you've got. So let's say you've got a business that's got five or six core processes. Some of them are customer facing. Some of them have to do with production. Some of them have to do with back office. Every step in that process has to be owned by somebody, and that's what's in the position description. Number two is that once I've done that, then I've got to figure out what the metrics are that I want to measure that, and I want to tie those metrics to where the business is going. As much as I can have somebody see what they're doing today, how that affects where the business is going, it is absolutely critical. In fact, we call that line of sight, which I'm going to kind of close this with. And so what I want to do on this third topic here of talking about, I know this, now I can begin to say, what are the knowledge or knowledges, what are the skill or skills, and what are the certifications that are now demanded of that position so that when I hire, I know who I can put into that job either immediately or who I'm not going to have to spend a lot of time with in training. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to turn back to Greg and say, Greg, your experience here, 55,000 members of the Green Industry Pros family, how many of those landscape companies do you see hiring the wrong people for the wrong jobs?
Another tough one to answer, Bill, but I'll answer it this way. You know, for the last couple of years now, as we poll our readers and talk to our readers, a good 80% have expressed real concern with being able to find the right employees for their companies. So if you look at that 80%, and I would say best case scenario, one out of four feel pretty comfortable that they can find the right people, as challenging as it is. I guess that would leave us with at least half who are not hiring the right people or putting the wrong people in the wrong jobs for one reason or another. I think that would be a pretty fair estimate.
Yeah, and of course, you know, in the job interview, let's say that you've got a line out the door and you've got people competing for that position. You know, that they're never going to be better employees than they are in a job interview. If you run into somebody with a bad attitude at the job interview, hint, hint, it isn't going to get any better from here. But the question is how do I kind of sift through all the BS? Because if they want the job, they're going to tell me what I want to hear. So let me turn to Stephen on this. Stephen, you've run. Let's talk about your experience running several landscape companies where you took them from small to big and sold them, as well as your consulting practice where you're helping business owners deal with this issue of hiring people who can perform. What advice would you give them?
I mean, the biggest advice I give my clients, the first thing is understand the needs of the company first, relating to the position before the candidate or per se the job description itself. So what does the company actually need in order to be successful? So that's the foundation, you know, for a process. The second part of it is once you understand that, it's going to allow you to put together a structure, and the structure we call the job description. It allows you to put together a job description, which is going to help you dial in on the qualities and the skill sets that you need from that individual. And what we're doing is, we're trying to eliminate mismatches. And I think one of the biggest problems that we have in the industry is it's really not the labor shortage per se. It's the mismatches of putting the wrong people into the wrong jobs.
Yeah. And that's a combination of not hiring the right people for the position in terms of knowledge or skill set, but you also have the problem of wrong people for the business. Their personality doesn't fit the company they're going into. How often is that the case, Stephen?
It's a problem. I mean, personality fit is also critical. I mean, if you look at a position as a let's say for a salesperson, if you have somebody who is a salesperson, and depending if you're selling commercial work or residential work, personality is critical. I mean, you don't want somebody who is too much of an introvert because they might not ask what it's going to take to get the job, or they might not be as comfortable and personable with somebody because of being more of an introvert. Or you might have somebody who's more of an extrovert and might come across as a used car salesman and be overbearing to a client. So it's a delicate balance. Again, this goes back to the position. You know, if I'm looking for somebody to go out and beat the pavement, for commercial work, I'm gonna look and build my job description and the attributes of that position. Probably, somebody who's more of an extrovert. If I want somebody dealing with residential design build, somebody who's very creative and artistic and is going to be dealing with residential clients, I'm going to want somebody who's probably a little bit more of an introvert, not within a shell, but somebody who is, comfortable talking to people and personable in talking to people. So personality fit is key. In the operational role, you can't have some hothead going out there and screaming and yelling at your frontline employees because you're going to have people quit. So you need to have somebody who's very well balanced and is able to temper his temper and deal with people and be able to adjust his tone to get his message across to his different audience.
Stephen, as we close out this third piece here, I know we're going to talk about it next week. Can you give us kind of a preview of how would you make the decision of who is the right person? I'm talking about job fit. I'm not talking about skill-based. I'm talking about job fit. How would you go about doing that? Give us a taste of the next show.
Well, it's a third, what I call a third. So this is one of my favorite subject matters, and I'm really excited to talk about this in our third show. So the first thing is really dialing in on what the company needs. And in order to do that, we like to use the term attributes, you know, and identify three, ideally six key attributes that the company requires for a person to be successful. So what are the attributes the company needs in order for the company to be successful first? And then after we determine that, we put that into a job description, the key attributes. The actual job duties are really the least important thing. The second step of that is when you start to interview people, what you want to do is you want to observe their own mannerisms and how they answer questions and how they engage with you. You want to look at their work history, but you also want to do some sort of assessment, profiling or assessment testing to see, does that person actually have those attributes that align with the position itself? So I like to call it a third. Third is first impression. What's the person look like when they come in? A third of it is, does the person, have the natural attributes for a long period of time, a sustainable period of time? And the last one is actually, the one that everybody makes the most important judgment call is, what's the resume say? The actual experience is the least important for me, because if the person has the right attitude and the aptitude to learn, we can teach them pretty much any skill set.
So let me close out this third piece. I wanted to go back to you, Greg, and say, and again, I know you got 55,000 clients and you haven't talked to all of them yet, but as you look at them, how many of the landscape companies out there, your experience, are actually taking Stephen's approach of looking at businesses from this perspective so they really get the total right match?
I would say they're very few and far between, probably maybe 10 to 20%, I would say. Because you got to remember, probably 70 to 80% have only a few employees. They're not thinking about any of this stuff at all. So I think when you look at the over a million guys, I still think it's probably less than one out of three from the experiences I've had in visiting them and talking to them. It's a rarity.
I want to chime in here. We have some great case studies that we've actually just concluded on candidate searches for two clients in two different geographic areas. And we refer to it as finding the needle in the haystack. We had clients that have typically hired based on resume and based on industry experience and then first impression. And we took a lot of time to educate them on our process. And we said to them, look, you're gonna have 10 resumes and 10 candidates come before you. Out of the 10, you're going to have one that's a possible fit. And we took them through this process with several different positions. And statistically, it turned out just to be that way. I mean, it was either 8 or 10 candidates before we found the right candidate, the ideal candidate, what we call the needle in the haystack. And, in our process, we use a some different factors for a match, but if we're just using a number for explanation purposes, we had with one client in the Pennsylvania market, we interviewed six people for one position, and all the people the first six applicants came within the industry, all had good experience with reputable companies and reasonable tenure within the industry. All of those applicants scored very, very low, okay? So we'll say they weren't ideal matches for the company. So they scored lower than 50% fits to this position. We then had one candidate that came from outside the industry who actually scored the highest score that I've seen probably about the last 10 years. One position was an operations manager the gentleman scored a 98% match to the position. Now, why is he a good fit? Is because he has the skill sets to work within the structure that the company identified, okay? And he systems and processes, works with KPIs, understands how to work within a defined business structure, has the interpersonal skills to deal with people and problems and problem resolution. And here's somebody outside the industry is a good fit. So, but he also has the great attitude and he has the aptitude, because we've determined that, to learn how to apply what he's learned in another job similar, but in a different industry, still within the environmental service industry, but just a different segment of it. So again, it takes time. Now, these clients gave us a lot of pushback going through this process. And after we took them through the process and we found these needles in the haystack, and they took a sigh of a deep breath to say, oh my gosh, it took a long time, but you were right. It really pays off. These people have been onboarded and are in these organizations now for 6 and 8 months and doing very, very well, good fits. So again, I'm not saying that everybody in the industry is not a good fit. What I'm saying is you have to take the time to put the people in the right positions and make sure that the person fits the fit of your company. Now, these people, I'll say this to Greg and to Bill, these people who came and did not score well or did not fit well, I should say, it doesn't mean that they're misfits, okay? It just means that they didn't fit into this position within this company. They might fit very, very well into another company if the positions laid out a little bit differently. But in this organization, because the process is so defined, the company took the time and invested in determining what do we need as a company, they didn't fit. So we're going to talk about this in the next segment, and I look forward to that.
Just to close this out, because Stephen, you give people a lot of really great information. Where can they get where can they access some of this information so they can begin to think about it, and where can they get help?
Well, I mean, they can certainly reach out to me at www.greenmarkconsultinggroup.com. Just send an email to me, and I love talking about this subject matter. I'll certainly talk to them on the phone and just kind of walk them through the process. And they could also email me at scohen@Greenmark Consulting Group, and we have several articles that we've put together that we can share on the hiring process in this methodology that we believe in.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. And so what we're basically saying is, if you know the demands of the position, then you can make a list, a really good list of performance requirements that in the HR world we called eligibility. Now, there's a whole lot of HR issues involved with this, that if it's performance-based and you find yourself into court, this is a great way of saying, hey, we did our homework, these are not opinions, but I'll save that for a different show. What I wanted to say, though, is that this gives me the ability to do half of my hiring problem, and that is I can quickly sort by asking for the right information. I can quickly sort who can do the work. Next week, we're going to talk about who, or next show, who should I be hiring of that list. So let me kind of close this now and say what we've discussed here, and I made it sound kind of a logical progression. Reality, it's pretty messy. But anyway, what I have to do is I have to make every position in the company serve a process. And I use that word. I thought about that a lot. Every position serves a process, because process is king. If you don't have a process, you don't have a business. You just have a lot of smart people perhaps running around and doing things, but you don't have what you need to really build and scale the company. And that those positions also have to be linked to good metrics that you can measure so you can determine how well you're doing and provide feedback, and they have to give people line of sight to the business. Because let's face it, one of the problems that we have is we have people making bad decisions in companies when they're the supervisor, the owner, or the foreman is not there telling them what to do. And the reason they're making bad decisions is not because they're not intelligent people. The reason they're making bad decisions is because they don't have line of sight to what the company is trying to accomplish. And so by doing these three things together, I can build not only the base to hire good people, I can build the base to run the company. Okay? And so the other thing to look at is, if I don't have a position tied to a process, I might have a position I don't need, and that's extra baggage that's affecting my margins. okay? It is my responsibility as the business owner, as the leader in the firm, to connect the dots. I cannot trust people to connect the dots themselves. Besides, it's not their job, it's my job, okay? The other thing that this does for me is it gives me an inventory of the knowledge and skills and certifications that I need in my business to perform, not only for hiring, but later on we're going to be talking about training and development. How do I put together training and development plans? How do I move somebody from apprentice to journeyman to the master status? And then how do I cross-train them? This answers all those questions. Okay, so for our next show, what we're going to tackle now is which is harder, figuring out what you want as you sort through all these resumes or documents you sent in, or spotting all of the BS that's in there. A different way of saying that is there's a pony in this room. Can I find it? And so what we will be tackling is the topic of suitability. And so for the team here at Owner Life and our sponsors, Green Industry Pros and Green Mark Consulting Group, this is William Eastman signing off until the next time. I hope everybody has a successful and prosperous month, and we will see you then. Take care.
Hey, if you're a landscape contractor or maybe an equipment dealer who does business with landscape contractors, you need to subscribe to Green Industry Pros. Green Industry Pros is a free resource for owners and managers of landscape companies and equipment dealerships. GIP's website, print magazine, and weekly emailed pro reports keep you up to date on the latest industry news and trends, new product information, business management advice, and small business success stories. I'm Greg Wartko, and I've been the editor for nearly 20 years. We recognize and respect how busy you are in running your small business. Sometimes you feel like you're all alone, but you don't have to be. Green Industry Pros can help you find the inspiration and insights to take your business to the next level. You can count on Green Industry Pros to help you cut through the clutter in today's age of information overload. Visit greenindustrypros.com to check us out and click on the green subscribe button to start your free subscription today.